Bill Arbizu begins the first of a two-part exclusive interview with a convicted Cuban exile bomber named Luis Crespo. Crespo was convicted last year for illegal possession of explosives and was sentenced to 5 years in prison. He was arrested with Humberto Lopez Jr. after the bomb they were building blew up in their hands. Last Friday, Lopez was sentenced to 15 years in prison for the explosives charge and on another charge of violating probation. Tonight, Crespo talks about recent terrorist bombings and assassinations and on the possible resumption of diplomatic relations with Cuba.
This is Glades Correctional Institution in Belgrade, Florida. It's a medium security prison overlooking Lake Okeechobee. It's home for 700 inmates. One of those inmates is convicted Cuban exile terrorist Luis Crespo.
Crespo has been here for 8.5 months now, serving a 5-year sentence for illegal possession of explosives with, quote, the intention to bring about bodily harm or death. The wording in the charges are tragically ironic, for the only man he has brought bodily harm to is himself. Crespo lost his right arm and crippled the other when a bomb he and Humberto Lopez Jr. were making last year accidentally blew up in their hands. Although Lopez has admitted to being a member of the FLNC, an underground Cuban exile terrorist organization, Crespo has not, although he has never denied it. To some Cuban exiles, Crespo is regarded as a martyr and hero, and remains a symbol of the true revolutionary, deeply concerned with the liberation of his homeland. To others, he's a deranged fanatic. Crespo spends much of his free time studying. He's presently taking courses in English comprehension that will enable him to study for a high school diploma, something which he never had the time to do before. History books fascinate him the most. A particular and obvious interest is the history of his own country. It's a shame, he says, that man has not learned the lessons of his own past. In spite of thousands of years of war, man still is greedy, corrupt, and oppressive. The result, he says, is that more than half of the population of the earth has lost its freedoms and exists under the chains of communism. I last spoke with the 33-year-old Crespo a year ago. This meeting marks the first time this year he's consented to an interview and the opportunity to make public statements concerning the recent terrorist bombings and assassinations, among other issues. Unable to speak in English, Crespo expresses views and feelings in Spanish. They've been translated into English.
What's your reaction to the recent wave of terrorist bombings in Miami?
Yo creo que cuando un pueblo se lanza a la lucha.
I believe that when a people launch themselves in a fight, they use all means available at their reach. There are times when a mightier power crushes them or attempts to crush them. Let me put this as an example to you. Consider the ant who works hard at the difficult task of constructing its home and its future without bothering anyone. But now, here you come and step on it, crushing its life, its labor, and dreams. And all it can do is but bite you.
What was your reaction when you first learned of the assassination of Orlando Mas Ferrer?
I believe the death of Dr. Mas Ferrer, whom I admired for his valor and intelligence, is a process of the Revolutionary War and only a process. All revolutionary processes bring death and blood, and this was one of them. Mas Ferrer was killed not by a determined group, but instead by the revolutionary process in which he had always lived. All of us who live in this revolutionary process could be killed at any moment.
More than likely, the United States will resume diplomatic relations with Cuba after the next election year. How will that affect the fight for the liberation of Cuba, in your opinion?
I believe that the liberationist efforts in our revolutionary war will not be effective. We will continue fighting should diplomatic relations be renewed or not. We will continue in our struggle until we have wiped out the Havana regime. Tomorrow night, Crespo will discuss his guerrilla training in the CIA, will express his feelings towards convicted terrorist Humberto Lopez Jr., and we'll talk about the bomb he and Lopez were making when it accidentally went off. Bill Arbizu, reporting for the Big News.
Concludes a two-part exclusive interview with a Cuban exile bomber, Luis Crespo, now serving time in prison. Crespo was arrested with Humberto Lopez Jr. after the bomb they were building blew up in their hands. Tonight, Crespo talks about his CIA training in guerrilla warfare and explosives.
The Glades Correctional Institution in Belgrade, Central Florida, has been home for Luis Crespo for 8.5 months now. But the convicted Cuban exile bomber is not alone here in this medium security prison. Hector Llanos, another Cuban exile terrorist, is serving a 30-year sentence here for setting off bombs in New York, Los Angeles, and Miami during the time of Orlando Bosch's terrorist campaign in the late 1960s. I last spoke with the 33-year-old Crespo, a soft-spoken, physically small man, a year ago, before he was sentenced to 5 years in prison for illegal possession of explosives. He was arrested after the bomb he and Humberto Lopez Jr. were assembling accidentally blew up in their hands. The physical scars of the explosion are quite evident. Crespo lost his right arm and permanently crippled his left hand. He's progressively going blind in one eye and is losing his hearing. This meeting marks the first time this year Crespo has consented to an interview. Unable to speak English, he expresses views and feelings in Spanish. They've been translated into English. Crespo feels he has been unjustly imprisoned by a government which he says has betrayed him. I asked him why he felt this way. Ever since I came to this country, I have never ceased to fight for the liberation of my own country. On many occasions, I have had the aid of the American government. I voluntarily enlisted in the U.S. Army during the missile crisis. I trained with the dedication and love for democracy, which I still have. During this time, we were betrayed and lied to like little children, telling us that we were training to fight for the liberation of Cuba. We were not to belong to the regular armed forces, something that I wouldn't have minded belonging to, but my main interest was the liberation of my own country. After I left the army, the CIA recruited me. Again, I underwent new training in guerrilla warfare, explosives, ballistics, training similar to that of Humberto Lopez Jr. Our lives are parallel. We have the same age, the same ideals and aspirations, and possibly the same identical training.
There are reports that the bomb you and Humberto Lopez were constructing was aimed at a Spanish radio announcer in Miami. Is this true?
Es absolutamente falso. Ni tan siquiera se probó.
It is absolutely false. They didn't even prove that we were assembling a bomb. It is true that where we were, there were explosives. But we have never taken any initiative against a Cuban that was not a communist. Least of all, in territory that was not within the territorial boundaries of nationalist Cuba. And that is proven throughout all of our records. Those reports attempt to discredit our revolutionary efforts. We have nothing against a Cuban that is openly fighting communism, but we have everything against him who is a communist.
Humberto Lopez has admitted being an FLNC member. Do you also admit to being a member?
I believe that revolutionary movement has worked efficiently. In this country, it is forbidden to belong to what one might term as a secret organization. And since belonging to one could bring about more charges and implications, I refuse to answer the question.
What are your plans and ambitions when you leave here?
I would divide it into four categories. First, the reconstruction of my family and home. My life has been completely destroyed with the bombing, my incarceration, the separation from my family. I have a son who has suffered great nervous strain. So, to be united with my family is first. Secondly, never, but never to abandon the efforts to liberate my country. Always to remain interested in its problems and try to solve them in the best way possible without harming anyone, except the communists, of course. Thirdly, to prepare myself to find work and be able to support my family. I don't know how. I know it will be difficult without the use of my hands, but I am certain I will manage since I have strong willpower. And fourth, if the political problem, by political I mean those who have unjustly imprisoned me, permit me to continue my studies, then I predict that in 5, 6, or perhaps 7 years, I will be able to finish a professional career in a university in another country. The State Parole and Probation Commission is reportedly holding investigations into Crespo's possible parole. If approved, Crespo could be a free man by early next year. Bill Urbizu, reporting for the Big News.
Good evening. Rolando Masferrara, much feared anti-communist, was killed today when a bomb exploded as he turned on the ignition of his car. The blast occurred just before 11 o'clock this morning in front of Masferrara's home in southwest Miami. The explosion rattled the area around the home and sent fragments of his body 100 yards in all directions and blackened the leaves of the trees above the car. His daughter, Ludvia, was visiting a neighbor when the blast went off. She ran up to police, screaming and asking what had happened. The wife of the 56-year-old activist was restrained by police, who feared that she might disturb evidence if she moved closer to that wrecked auto. Rolando Masferrara was one of the most controversial figures of Cuba in the last 30 years. A report on the man now from Manolo Reyes.
Masferrara graduated with honors from the University of Havana Law School. Later, he took part in the Civil War with Spain in 1936, fighting on the side of the Republicans against Generalissimo Franco. In the 40s, he formed part of an expedition to overthrow Dominican dictator Trujillo. The project was a failure. Then in the 50s, he had a private army called the Tigers of Masferrer. They were accused of many tortures and murders in Cuba under the president Fulgencio Batista. When Batista fled Cuba in 1959, so did Masferrer. He came to Miami with plans to overthrow Fidel Castro. Masferrer used his newspaper Libertad as the voice for anti-Castro opposition. The 1960s saw him involved in a plot to invade Haiti. The plot failed, but he found himself at the Atlanta Federal Prison. He was paroled after serving 2.5 years. Masferrer had been threatened many times in Miami. While some may say today's bombing was a political vendetta, others believe it's the result of his strong campaign against drug dealers and drug pushers. Manolo Reyes.
Cuban exile activist Rolando Masferrer. The 56-year-old one-time henchman of Cuban dictator Batista was killed last Friday when his car blew up as he turned on the ignition. Bill Urbizu has the story.
To his friends and admirers, it was difficult to believe that on this morning, Rolando Masferrer Rojas, known to them as El Tigre, the Tiger, would be buried. How could it be, many wondered? He seemed almost invincible. They remember him as a ruthless and much-feared political figure during the Batista years, riding down the streets of Havana in chauffeured limousines, hiding behind dark glasses, with bodyguards following his every move. But life in exile somewhat changed all that. Though always well-armed, he did away with the limousines and the bodyguards. But always an outspoken political activist and editor of his own newspaper, Libertad, controversy continued to surround him. And because of it, there were many threats on his life. On Friday, one of those threats materialized. He was killed instantly when his car blew up, when he switched on the ignition. In spite of the morning rain, several hundred persons turned out to pay their last respects. Lucila Masferrer, accompanied by her daughter, fought back the tears. Her husband had become the third politically active exile to be assassinated in Miami in the last 18 months. Pallbearers, aided by Masferrer's son, Rolando Jr., carried the flag-draped casket to its final resting place.
Y el sultán lo miró. Y le dijo, la muerte.
He was eulogized as a great legislator, referring to the days when he served in the Cuban Senate, and as a great journalist, dedicated to the liberation of his country. After the brief services, his followers passed by his casket, saying their final goodbyes to the man they had come to both fear and love. Rolando Masferrer has now been laid to rest, but the deep-rooted controversy surrounding his long political life has not. Police have no clues for his killing, and the feeling here is one of pessimism. Most feel his death will never be solved. Perhaps it is ironic that not too distant from his grave lies the grave of José Elías de la Torriente. Like Masferrer, a politically outspoken exile activist. Like him, assassinated. Like his violent death,
motives and clues still remain a mystery. Bill Urbizu at Flagler Memorial Park, reporting for the Big News.
Of the wave of terrorist bombings as the investigation continued into Masferrer's death. Ford Motor Company representatives joined Metro Bomb Squad officers today in their examination of the demolished 1968 Torino. Officials confirmed today that the explosive was apparently planted from the outside of the vehicle, then wired to the ignition. It detonated when Masferrer left his house Friday morning. The blast threw parts of his body as far as 50 yards from the shattered vehicle and blew out two windows in the Masferrer home. His wife was to have taken the car for an inspection, but didn't when Masferrer noticed a broken taillight. Convicted Cuban exile terrorist bomber Humberto Lopez Jr. said today he had no comment when questioned about his reaction to the assassination bombing of Rolando Masferrer. Lopez went to the federal courthouse today, where his lawyer argued before Judge Joe Eaton that his client was not competent to stand trial on bail-jumping charges because he had suffered brain damage. Judge Eaton told the attorney, Gino Negrete, that psychiatrists have found Lopez sane and capable of standing trial. Lopez left the courthouse under tight security this afternoon. Bill Urbizu questioned him about the Masferrer assassination.
What's your reaction to the bombing assassination of Rolando Masferrer?
No comments. No comments. No comments now.
Lopez was returned to the Broward County Jail. He's scheduled to be returned to Miami Wednesday when jury selection and trial proceedings will begin on his bail-jumping charge.
Funeral today at the Rivero Funeral Home on West Flagler Street drew an estimated 500 mourners. Masferrer, a senator under former Cuban President Fulgencio Batista, was blown to bits when he turned the ignition switch of his car last Friday. It was parked in front of his Southwest Section home. Masferrer was most recently the publisher of a Spanish-language newspaper, Libertad. Among those attending the services today was Eugenio Martinez, one of the four Miami Cuban Americans convicted in the Watergate break-in. Burial was at Flagler Memorial Park.
Claimed responsibility for last week's car bombing that killed former Batista henchman Rolando Masferrer. This symbol made by the group bears Masferrer's initials and the number 3, the number of people the group claims to have killed. It's not known what the other numbers in the drawing mean. A letter from Zero was received by mail today at the Miami office of the Associated Press. The letter was postmarked Philadelphia. In it, the group said Masferrer was killed because of his systematic work in the destruction of the anti-communist struggle. And the letter said Masferrer was also killed for his ties to the Cuban G2 security apparatus. Last April, Zero also claimed responsibility for the shooting death of Cuban exile Jose de la Torriente. In that letter, Zero said Torriente had betrayed the cause of Cuban liberation. Police are continuing their investigation into the death of Masferrer. Two more bombs exploded in separate sections of Dade County early today, damaging two businesses operated by Cuban exiles. No injuries were reported.
The first bomb went off at the downtown office of El Español. A company which ships medical supplies, food, and clothing from exiles here in Miami to their relatives in Cuba. The bomb, made of dynamite, caused heavy damage to the front and interior of the building. The owner expressed shock at the attack, saying he could not imagine why he had become a target. Metro bomb experts and Miami police spent several hours searching the areas for clues. That investigation is still continuing. At almost the same time, the Hialeah branch of El Español became the target of still another bombing. But this time, the bombers apparently misjudged their attack, since the device went off in the rear of a Cuban-owned beauty salon next door. Nevertheless, the bomb did cause extensive damage to the El Español office. The Hialeah branch specializes in arranging temporary Jamaican visas for Cuban nationals who have relatives exiled in the U.S. The exiles fly to Jamaica to visit their relatives. The two bombings are the 31st and 32nd bombing incidents in Dade County so far this year. Mayor Maurice Ferre called the news conference this afternoon in wake of today's bombings. Perret told reporters he had just come from a meeting with the FBI where he had revealed the name of an informant who had warned him of planned bombings just hours before 7 bombs went off in Miami last week. The mayor says the informant fears for his life and refused to release his name to newsmen. For the first time, Perret did, however, tell newsmen he has received several threats on his life and blamed many of this year's bombings on Cuban communist agents who performed these terrorist acts in an effort to discredit the Cuban exile community.
And I've been reading this morning the hearings of the subcommittee to investigate the administration of the Internal Security Act and other internal security laws before the United States Senate Committee on the Judiciary, entitled Terrorist Activity, the Cuban Connection in Puerto Rico, Castro's Hand in Puerto Rican and U.S. Terrorism, dated July 30th, 1975. And if you read through this, I think you can come to some conclusion, at least I do, that the hand of Havana has been involved in the New York, the Chicago bombings, and the Puerto Rican bombings. Now, I ask this community, which seems to not believe that it's possible that communist Cuba is involved in any of these bombings, how can you surmise that the Castro government can bomb in Angola and bomb in Caracas and bomb in South America and bomb in Chicago, New York, and San Juan and completely skip Miami, where there's over 400,000 Cuban exiles?
And Hialeah Mayor Dale Bennett also held a news conference. Bennett sent telegrams this morning to President Ford, Governor Askew, and Metro Mayor Steve Clark, urging them to take immediate action to combat the terrorist bombings plaguing South Florida. Bennett asked the president for the formation of a special task force to be sent down here to put an end to what he termed these treacherous acts of insurrection and anarchy. Bill Urbizu, reporting for the Big News.
The dishonor roll of 1975 Dade bombings is sickening. A few examples: in February, Channel 51 and a tailor shop were bombed. In April, it was the Bacardi building. In July, the Torture Friendship got it. In August, Replica Magazine and 2 pharmacies were blasted, along with a Bahamian cargo ship. In September, Eduardo Perez died when his car exploded. In the same month, a woman was badly burned in a house bombing, and a bomb sank a 57-foot yacht. In October, targets for the Dominican consulate, the Fort Lauderdale jail, a private home, and the car of Rolando Masferrer, who was killed in the explosion. Last week, there were 7 more bombs exploding across town. Last night, an export shop and a beauty parlor were ripped by more bombs. While time will test police effectiveness against the latest outrages, one step that should be in the works now is stiffer punishment under the law. Present Florida law calls for a 15-year maximum sentence for a bomb threat, 30 years for a bombing which causes injury to anyone or property damage. If someone is killed in a bombing, the punishment is life imprisonment. However, the life term has no minimum jail provision. The bomber who causes death without premeditation can be eligible for parole the day he enters prison. In the case of a conviction for murder in Florida, there is a minimum 25 years attached to a life sentence. That provision should be applied to bomb killings as well. We also favor stiffer punishment for conviction in cases of damage to property or injury to persons. A life term is not too severe. When force is threatened during a robbery, a life sentence can be given. A bomb threat, though, has a 15-year maximum. This should be made tougher. Finally, the state of Florida has in effect a provision to pay $5,000 for information leading to the arrest and conviction of any bomber. That fact needs to be publicized more, and the laws need to be strengthened so we can look for a way to end this outrage which threatens our lives, our economy, and our way of life. Good night. May the good news be yours.
Good evening. More bombs exploded in downtown Miami today. One at the Miami Police Headquarters, the other near the State Attorney's Office, bringing the number of bomb explosions in the past 24 hours to 7. And a Cuban exile leader has blamed an appearance by former Secretary of State William Rogers in a Miami speech for the bombings, and Florida's U.S. senators have called on the U.S. Attorney General for help in solving the terrorism. No one was seriously injured, but considerable damage was done by 2 bombs which exploded today at the Metro Justice Building and the Miami Police Station. They were the sixth and seventh bombs that have exploded in the Miami area since yesterday. Mark Lunder reports on today's bombings, and Stan Matthews reports on extraordinary precautions that have been taken in the Miami area after last night's bombing.
Police say both of today's bombs were made of dynamite, much stronger than the four pipe bombs that exploded overnight. Shortly before one this afternoon, the first bomb exploded on the sixth floor of the Metro Justice Building in a laboratory in the state attorney's office. Chief Investigator Martin Dardis was in his office nearby when the bomb went off.
Heard what I thought was a bomb. I was talking to Mr. Carhart, and he thought a filing cabinet fell over, and I said, from Bastogne, Belgium, I remember, it's a bomb. It sounds like a bomb, and it was a bomb. There'd been a painter there doing painting our floor. I'd been in there about 5 minutes, and one of our attorneys, about 5 minutes prior to the explosion.
Had somebody been in that men's room, what do you think would have happened?
Well, they would have been seriously injured, I'm sure.
As they had several other times already, the policemen led bomb-sniffing dogs through public areas looking for more possible explosives. Emergency vehicles stood by outside the Metro Justice Building. There were no injuries in that blast, but only two blocks away at the Miami Police Station, a young secretary named Roseanne Franco was shaken up after a close call. She'd been walking in the second floor hallway when a bomb went off at about 1:25.
Next to me, it happened as I walked right directly past the doorway.
She was treated and released at Jackson Memorial Hospital. The bomb at the police station had done considerable damage to the second floor hallway. Officer Robert Vallejo was nearby when the blast occurred.
Actually, it was a big explosion, smoke, and the walls and everything, you know. That's it.
A lot
of people screaming. There was no injuries at all. We searched, you know, the office, and there was nobody hurt. Right away, we evacuated the whole building.
Where were you? How close were you?
Well, I was close to it. I heard the explosion. When I turned around, there was a lot of smoke. That's all I can say, really.
It's thought the bomb was smuggled into the police station inside a tape recorder. The detective says he'd seen a tape recorder on top of a cabinet in the hallway, but thought nothing of it.
Well, it was rather odd looking, the fact that it didn't really belong there, but I never paid much attention to it. So I'm assuming that the tape recorder could play an important part in this.
You had never seen one like that there before.
Well, let's face it, you just don't lay tape recorders out in the hallway.
Police Major Gil Zamora met with newsmen representing the Latin press to issue an appeal for cooperation in finding the people responsible for the bombing. Two groups have emerged as possible culprits in those bombings. Calls have been received from the Cuban Youth Group and the New Black Revolutionary Front. Among those vitally interested is Julius Mattson, special agent in charge of the FBI's Miami office. He visited the scene of the Miami police blast today. And like many lawmen, Mattson was up all night looking for clues in the search for the bombers. Mark Lennon reporting for the Big News.
Because of the bombings, police ordered several government buildings evacuated while they were searched for explosives. The federal building downtown, already under tightened security, was emptied this afternoon, moments after the bombing of the Miami Police Department. Police and security personnel conducted a floor-by-floor search of the building, but found nothing. About 4:30 this afternoon, police received another bomb threat against the federal building, this one also an apparent hoax. A threat against the Dade County Courthouse, one of several made by a caller to Channel 7 News last night, was also an apparent hoax. Metro bomb-sniffing dogs were sent into the building to search for explosives that went over the entire building, including the commission chambers, which were cleared during a break in this morning's zoning and planning hearing. Police also cleared the Miami City Hall at Dinner Key. The state office building, a frequent target of bomb threats, was closed early this afternoon. On Miami Beach, workmen were sent home and staff members were cleared from the huge convention complex in response to a bomb threat. The hall has been threatened hundreds of times in the past, according to police, but today was the first time it was actually cleared. No events were scheduled today, and police decided after the seven bombings last night and today, this threat might be serious. Firemen and convention center staffers searched the complex for several hours, but nothing was found. Miami Beach Police Major Donald Fleming complained that he couldn't get the resources he needed to perform a thorough search of the building.
No, we tried to get a dog from Metro, and we have five dogs of our own, but none are explosive detectors. We tried to get a dog from Miami and from Metro, and were unsuccessful because they were being used over there. I tried to get one from Homestead Air Force Base, but for their reasons, they were unable to get one up to us.
I think without a dog, there's much hope of really doing a thorough search of this entire building?
No, we couldn't possibly make a thorough search. We called in two engine companies from the fire department, and they did the best they could, and we have 30 minutes to find out whether anything's going to happen or not.
A caller had warned the bomb would go off between 2 and 3 p.m., and police and firefighters stood by outside during that time, but nothing happened. The rash of bombings yesterday and today have put police in an awkward position. Because of the bombings, they feel they must take no chances. But for the same reason, they feel they'll probably receive a lot more crank bomb threats than usual, reducing their capacity to react to the real thing. Stan Matthews for the Big News.
Because of the wave of bombings, the U.S. Postal Service has announced that all post office lobbies in Miami, Hialeah, and Opa-locka will be locked from 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. On Saturdays, the lobbies will be locked from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 8:30 Monday morning. We'll have a report on last night's bombings in the Miami area in a moment.
Bombings in the Miami area began last night with 5 separate pipe bomb explosions. George Crolius has a report.
One of the night bombings at the Barnett Bank at 7760 West Flagler was not discovered until 8:30 this morning. An employee arriving for work spotted a broken front window, and police found a pipe bomb that had exploded. It's not known why the bank was a target of the bombers, who earlier had hit government offices. Although no one was injured last night, experts say the small homemade pipe bombs are potentially very dangerous.
This type bomb here is designed to bring bodily injury, mainly because the fragmentation that comes with the blast of the metal pipe bomb itself.
At this point, is there any evidence as to who put this thing here?
No, sir.
The first explosion last night occurred at 8:18 p.m. at the Miami FBI headquarters at Biscayne Boulevard and 38th Street. Some employees were inside, but no one was injured. The other blasts came in rapid succession. After the initial explosion at the FBI office, 2 post office branches were hit, the Riverside branch at 23rd Avenue and West Flagler Street, and the Tamiami substation. The fourth explosion was in front of the Social Security Administration office at 1408 Northwest 36th Street, and an unexploded device was found near a state unemployment office. The Barnett Bank explosion probably occurred between 9 and 10 last night. Experts say the materials used in a pipe bomb are easy to obtain. And the agent in charge of the Miami FBI office, Julius Matson, says it's almost impossible to find the culprits.
The big problem is with most bombings is that the physical evidence is destroyed. So that law enforcement is dependent almost entirely on people who know something about the bombing or have some information. Now, I know that from my own experience.
Matson also said the FBI is assuming the bombings are of a political nature. George Crowley is reporting for the Big News.
And the former president of the Bay of Pigs Veterans Association, Juan Perugiero, blamed an appearance in Miami by Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs, William Rogers, for setting off the wave of terrorism. Rogers spoke in downtown Miami this afternoon.
Representatives from several Cuban exile organizations picketed outside the DuPont Plaza Hotel today, where Assistant Secretary of State Rogers was speaking at a luncheon gathering sponsored by the Miami Chamber of Commerce. Signs called Rogers a red traitor and friend of Fidel Castro and his communist regime. The demonstration stems from Rogers' political views, which in the past have leaned towards a normalization of U.S. diplomatic relations with Cuba, a political ideal not shared by most Cuban exiles here in Miami, and the cause for much heated controversy.
Despite the picketing outside, inside, Rogers ignored the controversial issue of Cuba in his speech and instead chose to tread a much safer ground, concentrating on the future of U.S.-Latin American economic relations.
In addition to the picketing, the luncheon was also marred by the handing out of leaflets at many tables, which called for the release of Cuban political prisoners being held in American jails. Those who distributed the leaflets were promptly taken out of the assembly room. Outside, they explained to newsmen they were calling for the release of Humberto Lopez Jr. and Luis Crespo, presently serving prison terms for illegal possession of explosives. After his speech, newsmen surrounded Assistant Secretary Rogers, asking him to comment on the issue of Cuba, neglected in his speech, and the present wave of terrorist bombings.
We have just received word that bombs have gone off in the state attorney's office and the Miami Police Department. They've also evacuated the federal building. The former president of the Bay of Pigs Association says the bombings have been triggered because of your appearance here today. What's your reaction?
Well, I would have no comment about that except to say that it seems to me that it is more consistent with the processes of a democracy such as the United States to discuss these matters rather than to resort to violence. Resort to violence, it seems to me, is counterproductive. It makes rational solutions and improved understanding more difficult amongst the people of this country, and one would have to say one deplores resort to violence on a matter of this sort. Beyond that, however, I'd have no comment.
Rogers says the issue of normalizing U.S.-Cuban diplomatic relations should be approached carefully and with mutual understanding. What's more, he sees no reopening of diplomatic ties in the near future. Bill Urbizu reporting for the Big News.
Miami Mayor Maurice Ferre and Florida Senators Lawton Chiles and Richard Stone reacted angrily to the wave of bombings in Miami. All three have called on the U.S. Attorney General Edward Leavy to do everything possible to apprehend the terrorists. Some comment on the bombings later.
It was tight in Dade County today in the wake of a rash of terrorist bombings, and Mayor Ferre says he warned Assistant Secretary of State Rogers not to visit Miami.
Stanley Morgan
was sentenced to Miami today after a number of terrorist bombings that began Wednesday night and continued through yesterday. Only one minor injury was reported. Today, tight security measures were in effect in most government agencies.
At the Flagler Street Courthouse, all persons entering the building with packages or purses were subjected to a search of the articles. Dade Public Safety personnel locked all doors in the building except one to ensure that everyone, including employees, was screened. The order was strictly carried out, as even Metro Commissioner Beverly Phillips surrendered her purse for search. Four telephone bomb threats were made to the courthouse yesterday, and the building was ordered closed early. Today, no incidents were reported. At the Metro Justice Building, where yesterday a bomb exploded inside a lavatory, security was equally tight. All persons entering the building passed through one door and were required to sign their names. Some visitors were required to furnish identification. Security personnel conducted spot checks of packages carried into the building. At the Miami Police Department, where a bomb exploded yesterday, there was also a tight ring of security. All vehicles entering the complex were checked, and the occupants questioned about the nature of their business. A secretary was shaken by yesterday's explosion, and today, police department employees were concerned about the situation.
Well, they really can't believe this actually happened. When it hits close to home, you sort of begin to wonder, you know, it's not a joke anymore.
City of Miami employees today received a two-page information guide detailing bomb threats and evacuation techniques. The guide instructs employees who receive telephoned bomb threats to ask the caller a series of questions, including when the bomb is going to explode, where, and a description of the device. The last question on the guide is, where are you calling from? The information guide was released through the city attorney's office. Perhaps the tightest ring of security prevailed at the Dade Public Safety Department. All visitors were required to present identification, sign in, and to wear badges with the number of the floor on which they had business. Anyone who was not on official business was not admitted. Security precautions led the U.S. Postal Service to a temporary change of hours. All post offices in Miami, Hialeah, and Opa-locka were locked at 6 o'clock this evening, as they will be weeknights. On Saturdays, the lobbies will be locked from 1 p.m. until 8:30 on Monday morning. While the security precautions prevail, a bomb hunter squad composed of FBI, Dade Public Safety, and City of Miami police personnel is working on the situation. Public Safety Assistant Director Walter Lohe told reporters late today that community residents have knowledge of the bombings but are not helping police.
Well, because the material as it's developed, the material as that's used, it's purchased, it's put together, someone has to know where it's coming from, someone has to know who's putting it together. I can't believe that it's a one-man operation who is keeping solely to himself. I'm sure that with the physical evidence that we have recovered so far, that there has to be a number of people who would at least have some knowledge as to what's going on.
And you believe these are people in the community?
Of course.
Chief Lougheed says security precautions will remain in effect as long as needed. Dwight Lauderdale reporting with the big news.
And Miami Mayor Maurice Perret says he warned Assistant Secretary of State William Rogers against visiting Miami because of the possibility of trouble. But there's no evidence that any of yesterday's bombings were aimed at Rogers' appearance before the Chamber of Commerce. Some comment on the bombings later in tonight's big news. Wayne?
Claiming responsibility for the bombings has sent a note to law enforcement officials. In that note, the group claims that the FBI killed Miami Cuban exile Rolando Masferrer, editor of Libertad magazine. The group says it wants, quote, the release of all Cuban political prisoners now in U.S. jails, end quote. And they want $50 million to be distributed to minority groups throughout the United States. The trial of two...
Nor do I think any rational thinker will accept the contrived excuses for the terror attacks in this community, any more than I can believe that Mayor Maurice Perret would have actually canceled the appearance, as he suggests, of a federal public official if he had known that it would result in a rain of bombs. If the brainless terrorists in this community thought that the threat of street violence could lock out everyone who doesn't agree with them, we would become the only American city physically and intellectually isolated, a prisoner of a subculture society. What the mayor has to do, and he is trying, along with other public officials, is to inspire some top-notch police work to catch the courageous bombers who play with explosives like children play with toys. To do so, the police must have the cooperation and the assistance of the Latin community. And to get such cooperation, the Latin leadership, or those who usually profess to represent Latin thinking, except when the chips are down, must take the lead and the risks to ensure and encourage the flow of tips and information that are basic to any successful investigation. With a presidential primary in Florida only 3 months away, we must deal quickly and firmly with demonstrations of violence before the candidates for the nation's highest office are effectively denied the freedom to campaign in the key primary state. We are fortunate, I suspect, that the political conventions elected to go elsewhere. Law enforcement has already demonstrated that it cannot even cope with the criminal element at its basic and at its most dangerous level. Miami, but heavy security also continues around government buildings, as Bob Kaplitz reports.
There was surveillance and tight security at federal buildings today because of the 7 bombs that exploded Wednesday night and Thursday. Visitors to Metro Police headquarters had to get a number which restricted them to one floor. If they wanted to go to another floor, they had to get another number. Briefcases were searched and identification was required. At the Justice Building, people had to sign in, and they were also searched because a bomb went off in that building yesterday, causing a lot of damage.
Attempting to be proactive in this particular area is a very difficult law enforcement task because it requires, in a sense, looking for a reasonable or a logical or justifiable answer to a totally illogical, unreasonable unjustifiable acts. I mean, it's hard to define or to even determine what is in the mind of these people who are attempting this. We're not even receiving any valid information as to what their cause is. We have people willing to take credit for it via the phones, but their statements are in conflict with each other.
Lougheed won't say what leads police have. However, sources close to the investigation tell us they are getting leads from citizens who say they saw people buying several clocks similar to the ones used with the time bombs. Law enforcement authorities are interviewing these witnesses to find out who they saw buying those clocks. Bob Kaplitz, Channel 4 News.
Bombing and gunfire hits the University of Miami campus in a speech by Angela Davis. Arson is still considered a possible cause of that seventh fatality fire early this morning. And there's three shooting dead in Fort Lauderdale said to be underworld figures. Details coming up.
Saturday News Update with Larry Kloss.
Good evening. An explosion and gunfire interrupted a speech by black activist Angela Davis at the University of Miami tonight. The small pipe bomb was in a planter in the student union patio just a few yards from where the entrance of the cafeteria where the rally for Miss Davis was being held. It contained some type of chemical, apparently, and at least one student was taken to a hospital after complaining of chemical burns. Other students who were within 15 or 20 feet of the bomb when it went off said they weren't hurt, but just shaken by what was apparently a minimum amount of explosives. An intense manhunt, during which at least one shot was fired, apparently netted nothing. At 9:20, police rushed Miss Davis from the campus and took her under heavy escort to Miami International Airport. Late tonight, police found two sticks of dynamite under a University of Miami security car. The dynamite reportedly had a timing device attached to it. It had apparently malfunctioned, had gone off without detonating the dynamite.
When a bomb exploded outside the University of Miami cafeteria tonight where revolutionary Angela Davis was about to make a speech. Darrell Pollack, I understand that you were there when it all happened.
Right. The speech was scheduled to start about 8. We heard the explosion at 8:10. Aides immediately rushed Angela Davis into a hallway and surrounded her, but she was not near the actual blast. It occurred in a drain pipe outside the student union cafeteria. There had been very tight security tonight, but apparently it wasn't tight enough. So far, no one knows how the bomb got there. One theory is that someone on the roof dropped it down the pipe. There was minor damage. A window was shattered inside, and there were some pieces of the pipe and other debris scattered outside on the patio. Inside, almost 1,000 people were waiting, and amazingly, no one was hurt. Everyone remained calm and stayed in their seats. About 15 minutes after the explosion, Angela Davis began her speech with the words, "People in Miami sure do know how to give you a roaring welcome." She is here for Black Culture Week at the university, widely known as a communist and a revolutionary. In fact, there was a note of irony before the explosion. At her news conference, she was asked whether she believes a revolution must be violent.
I don't want bloodshed. I've seen much too much bloodshed already, and too many of my friends and people I know have fallen in the struggle.
University police have received two bomb threats after the explosion, and one person claiming responsibility says he was part of an organization called the Cuban Liberation Army. But no one has been arrested, and both Metro and Coral Gables police are investigating.
Good evening. Controversial Cuban exile Ramon Donestevez was shot to death in Porain this morning, and police are still trying to piece together details of the murder. Rita Siegfried has the story.
From the outside, there's nothing to link this barn-like building at 9970 Banyan Street in Porain with one of the most controversial Cuban political activists in South Florida. Our cameras were not permitted to film the interior today, but inside is where Ramon Donestevez conducted his boat building business. Donestevez went into his office in the front of the factory sometime before 8:30 this morning. Apparently, he was alone until a still unidentified assailant or assailants came in and shot him in the head twice. He was found barely alive by an employee who called Metro Police.
Well, when I arrived, that was shortly after 9 a.m. this morning, I entered the building and observed the victim on the floor, apparently with some life signs. Fire rescue arrived and then proceeded to administer first aid and then transported him to Miami-Dade General Hospital.
A police helicopter conducted an aerial search of the area. A member of the Metro Canine Corps, Gator, was brought in to sniff out possible bombs. None were found today. However, Donestevez himself found an explosive device at the door of his factory a year ago. And while officers were looking for pieces of evidence at the scene, Ramon Donestevez died at Miami-Dade General Hospital. His body was transported to the Dade County Medical Examiner's Office. His mother, who arrived at the hospital after being notified of the shooting, watched. The man who reported the attack, Antonio Estrada, was taken to Miami-Dade by authorities reportedly to identify the body. Late this afternoon, he was being questioned by investigators. Little information is coming out of Metro headquarters at this point. However, it appears the most plausible theory is that the killer of Ramon Benestevez, the man who made boats and enemies, as one detective put it, most likely could be linked to one of Dade's Cuban political factions. Rita Siegfried, Channel 7 News.
Benestevez was a deeply controversial political figure among Miami's Cuban community. Bill Urbizu reports on the man, his activities, and his skirmishes with the law.
Ever since Ramon Benestevez entered the political spotlight 10 years ago, controversy surrounded him, and because of it, he lived under the constant threat of death. Benestevez was a complex political figure, admired by some, despised by others. Yet he shared with his fellow exiles a common dream, that of a liberated Cuba. In the late 60s, he took on the role of activist, claiming credit for sabotage missions inside Cuba, and later vowing to lead an invasion against the forces of Fidel Castro. The invasion never materialized. Instead, Benestevez was convicted of extortion when he threatened to dynamite the home and car of a Cuban businessman unless the man came up with $800 for the planned invasion. Instead of a prison term, however, he was placed on probation. Soon, his political philosophy took a drastic turnabout. He changed his role from
activist to pacifist, and became obsessed with seeking the release of Cuban political prisoners. In all, he made 6 boat trips to Cuba. On one of those trips, he successfully negotiated the release and return of 3 political prisoners. Back in Miami, however, he was repeatedly jailed for violating his probation by sailing to Cuba. Last year, he collected several tons of food, medicine, and clothing from the exile community, which he planned to load aboard his boat and sail it into Havana Harbor to distribute among what he termed as the needy Cuban people. His mercy mission, Operation People of Cuba, brought him much criticism from many sectors of the exile community, which felt Benestevez had betrayed the cause for the liberation of Cuba and was now working in favor of the Castro regime. Inevitably, there were many threats. Last year, a 5th bombing attempt was made on his life in a South Bay boat building factory. Luckily, the bomb was dismantled just seconds before it was time to go off. After that, Benestevez denounced all acts of terrorism.
We have hundreds of threats. We have been bombed already. This is the 5th time. And there is something that upset me a lot, because we are not in the side of terrorism. We are against the people who use that way to win citizenship. If they are Cubans or whoever they are people that should be dead, not in jail.
Plans for his mercy mission were never carried out. A few weeks later, Benestevez was jailed when several semi-automatic rifles and handguns were seized at his factory. He was sentenced to 7 years in jail for violating his probation. In his last public appearance last month, the 40-year-old Benestevez won a major battle in court when Judge Ira Dubitsky ruled in his favor, a motion to suppress the evidence on the grounds that weapons that were seized in his factory had been seized illegally. And so the name of Ramon Benestevez is now added on to the list of men like Jose Elias de la Torriente, Luciano Nieves, and Rolando Masferrer, all exile activists, all controversial figures, all victims of political assassinations in Miami in the past 2 years. And they share still another thing in common. All of their assassins are still at large. Bill Urbizu, Channel 7 News.